to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for joining us, and I ask you to go out and visit our sponsors and supporters. Again, welcome, welcome, welcome. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Sheriff Chip Hughes.
Retired Sheriff Asa Buck, current Chief Deputy.
Pat Park.
Kim Fink.
Glenn Fink.
Well, welcome, welcome, welcome. As you see, we have a couple of guests on board today, and well, the first thing I want to do, Sheriff, is I want to say congratulations slash condolences, I don't know, on your appointment as second vice chair.
Yes, sir. Yes, second vice president of the Sheriff's Association. It's
excellent.
It's very humbling. I just finished up as the third vice president of the association and was elected by the other 99 sheriffs to progress to the second, and it's extremely humbling to know that the sheriffs believe in your vision, what you've done for the association, what you do for the state and your citizens, and you know they do want you to be the spokesperson or one of the spokespersons for the association, and very fortunate to be able to follow the footsteps of Sheriff Buck, who was went through the line just like I'm working through now and was ultimately our president and chairman of the executive committee. So he's a past president now, but yeah, it is. It's an honor.
So what is the purpose of the association?
Wow. Really, you know, to preserve the office of sheriff. To make sure that, and believe me, there's many out there that would love to deteriorate the office of sheriff really down to nothing.
Not the sovereign citizens. They want the white shirt.
Yeah. So.
But again, the sheriff's office is the only elected law enforcement position.
Mm-hmm. The only elected law enforcement officer. Really, in the United States.
Besides the DA.
Yeah, we're not appointed by, once you're elected, you're not appointed. So.
Does the association try to influence legislation that would protect us, for instance, when the marijuana bill comes up in the General Assembly? Does the Sheriff's Association take a stance?
Wow, Sheriff. I'll let you touch on that one.
Well, I think Sheriff Hughes is deferring to me on that one because I've been such a strong advocate of maintaining our current position with regard to marijuana remaining illegal in our state.
Amen.
And but to answer your question, generally, our Sheriff's Association takes positions to support legislation or oppose legislation, depending on what it is, obviously, if it has an effect on law enforcement and public safety and the Office of Sheriff. And that is one of the what the Sheriff's Association does is we promote the Office of Sheriff and public safety through training and education, and also working very closely with our state legislature with regard to state law, and also working with our federal representatives as well, if they're looking to make changes to the federal law, which would promote public safety or could, here again, have a negative impact on public safety. And we have a very strong, this isn't our terminology, folks involved in Raleigh, you know, they say that we have one of the strongest advocacy groups around, and you have 100 sheriffs, and most of the time the sheriff is the most popular elected official in the county and has the ear of certainly the public, and we get a lot of feedback from the public, obviously, and we work very closely with other elected officials all throughout the local and state and federal government, and we work very hard to try to make sure that good legislation gets passed, and we work just as hard to make sure that bad legislation does not get enacted.
You know, one of the things that we had a show a few weeks ago, maybe a month and a half ago, with Sergeant Hopper on with the canines, mm-hmm. and understanding at that time, I'm just going to ask you for the update on this. The unfortunate thing is, first off, if a canine ever got injured in the field, that a doctor or an EMT at that time could not administer anything to them because they're not a veterinarian. And I think that's gotten changed, but also that canine is considered just property, not as an officer
as a deputy
doing their duty.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So I know there is legislation that's been passed now that holds people accountable for assaulting a canine officer, if you will, just as if, almost as if they were to assault the handler. So that was legislation that had been worked on for a long time, and we're glad that got pushed through, you know.
It's made progress.
Yeah. You know, look, go back to the association real quick. We get a lot of times they will try to, they being, you know, legislators or whatever, try to draw us into things that really have absolutely nothing to do with public safety and get us to weigh in on that. So we're very selective, you know. We don't go out and strongly oppose everything or strongly support. You know, a lot of, I mean, it goes through our committee. Once it goes through the committee, then it comes to the executive committee. So we put a lot of thought into the process of choosing whether to strongly oppose, oppose, no position, or support, and strongly support legislation. And really, it, for us, it has to be centered around public safety.
Okay, that brings me back to a circle. Today is Wednesday, and we listened to Anthony Fauci today and brought back a lot of COVID memories. And I really appreciate, Sheriff Hughes, you not telling us we had to shut down our churches and things in Craven County. However, there were sheriffs within our state who didn't hold the same position. As an association in things like the public safety where COVID was involved, do you just say, okay, we can't agree to agree, so we just don't take a position? And the same thing would go with the illegal aliens. You know, there are some counties that are for the illegal immigrants and other areas that are okay with supporting ICE.
Wait. Excuse me.
That was subtle, Pat.
Yeah.
Make it more subtle.
That's,
yeah.
That's me. I'm known for my subtlety, yes.
So how do you guys work it as an association when there's difference of, it's big differences?
Yeah, so, you know, well, let's just use the, you know, illegal immigration that, you know, legislators passed a law, you know, saying that the sheriffs, you know, shall, that, you know, it's not an option. Well, to Sheriff Buck and myself, really, it was never not an option for us. You know, we took an oath to defend and, you know, to, you know, there's a way to get into the United States legally, and those that don't are obviously breaking the law. So, whereas we don't enforce federal law, but when those folks break the law in our counties, we do take the appropriate action. And we do honor detainers and have since day one. And it's a shame that, you know, legislation had to be put in place to make certain sheriffs do things. But I was not on the executive committee at the time. Sheriff Buck was when the association supported putting legislation together. And I'm pretty sure our executive committee helped write the legislation that the legislators passed to do this because it was the right thing.
Good.
You know?
Good.
And we try to do things that, you know, benefit all sheriffs equally across the board, regardless of party affiliation or size of county or anything like that. But this was, you know, clearly, I think that they thought it was the right thing to do at the time, and it was. You know, it might have ruffled a few feathers, but it was the right thing to do,
right,
in my opinion. So.
Well, and I think what you were touching upon is we have 100 counties, we have 100 sheriffs. And so can you think of any situation where everybody agrees on everything, you know, 100% across the board all the time? I mean, even within political parties, obviously you have disagreements. And so, you know, we'll talk specifically about the immigration enforcement issue and honoring detainers and that type of thing. When you have 90 plus sheriffs who are all in agreeance, Republicans and Democrats, you know, we're not going to let a piece of legislation get held up by three or four or five people. And so, you know, whether it's immigration, it could be some other issue. There may be times here and there where you may have more of a 40-60 split or a 50-50 split, that type of thing. And sometimes our association may not delve into a particular issue. That's very rare, especially with regard to public safety issues. And those of us in this area of the state, we were honoring detainers long before that issue became political. And that's one thing that's unfortunate nowadays in our politics, is that politics has spilled over into public safety. When we were first coming along years ago, Republicans and Democrats all agreed on public safety. You rarely saw any issue that was political, but unfortunately, that's not the case nowadays. And you know, our I think most people agree that our political party seems to be on the right side of the issues when some of these political things kind of delve over and into public safety.
Yeah. Well, when you have, Democrats that say, I'm not going to work with ICE unless I'm made to, or it's the law that says I have to, that's a problem. You know, and of course, you know, each sheriff, it's their prerogative as to how they conduct matters in their county. And but yeah, I mean, we don't get to pick and choose. You know, I don't like that law, so therefore I'm not going to enforce it.
Unless you're a George Soros funded DA.
Ma'am?
Unless you're a George Soros funded DA.
Well, there you go.
And, you know, as a former DA, that really bothers me, that these DAs have made their political bones by saying, I don't like these laws. They'll actually, you know, issue a list. These are the laws that we're not going to bother with from the DA's office. And it includes things like aggravated burglary. Well, these are quality of life issues.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If you can't be safe in your home, what is your definition of public safety?
Right. And, you know, like the immigration stuff for us, it's very important. Because if I have a county that the sheriff chose not to work with ICE and wasn't going to honor detainers, well, there's nothing that says when that criminal, that illegal, gets out of their jail and they chose not to honor that detainer, that they're not going to come to Craven County or Carteret County. Mm-hmm. That's the problem we have with it, mm-hmm. you know. Even if you tell me they're going to be contained to your county, I still got a problem with you not working with ICE to get illegals out that aren't supposed to be here.
So all of a sudden you'll have to confront them twice.
Well, I mean, yeah, if they come to my county and I find out they weren't held in Mecklenburg County 2 months ago because that sheriff chose not to work with the detainer, now you've put my citizens in harm's way because you mm-hmm. failed to what I think did, you know, do your job. So that's the problem we have with it, you know, because mm-hmm. you can't assure me that my citizens are going to be safe for your failure to do your part.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with the statistics, though, because our crime rate is dropping. As our illegal alien deportation goes up, the crime rate falls. And of course, the liberal media never asked the follow-up question. You know, if they ever talk about that issue, why is the crime rate following mm-hmm. or falling? Well, because we're sending people out. Why do you think that is? They never asked that follow-up question. They never put them on the spot.
Folks, on that one, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, this is CCTA Wake Up Call. Thank you for listening.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout Eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Mary, where are you taking us?
We're going to ask about the new deputy chief of Craven County Sheriff's office.
There you go.
Or is it chief deputy?
You noticed I paused.
We've had the conversation many times about office versus department.
I thought you were going to say the D word there.
And what we do is we have
a... Got to come up with a buck, yeah.
That's right. You got to come up with a dollar. Put it in the jar. There's no such thing as a sheriff's department. It's the office of the sheriff. We're not a department of the county. You know, we're separate and apart. Very fortunate to have my mentor, actually, as the chief deputy at the sheriff's office. When I first was elected, you know, each sheriff is assigned a mentor, and that's a veteran sheriff that kind of, you know, takes you by the hand and go, hey, man, this is what works, this is what doesn't work, you know, let's have almost daily conversations for us. But, you know, being friends for a very long time and working law enforcement together in Carter County, obviously I requested Sheriff Buck, and he graciously accepted and has just been my mentor even to today. So for this thing to be full circle, come back around, and him to want to be part of what we're doing and just going, absolutely, I'll help you, continue to help you out in any way, is very, very, there's nothing more humbling than to have your mentor and fellow sheriff and the person that kind of put you on this track. And you all well know a lot of just about all the drug stuff we've done in regards to opioids and things we do in the jail and stuff like that. I mean, I got from ASA. So as a new sheriff to come in and he goes, here's the playbook. That is that's huge. So a lot of credit goes for the things that we've had happen here goes to Sheriff Buck. But to have him as the chief deputy here, it's not a new position. It's a position that's been in place for many, many years. Some sheriffs have a chief. Some call it a chief of staff. Some don't have any named chief deputy, and you know, the significance of naming a chief, one is if something were to happen to the sheriff, the chief deputy fills that role until the commissioners and the party of the sheriff that deceased or left office fills the vacancy. So he or she carries the torch until the appointment is made and ultimately an election. But yeah, it's not a new position. And what the chief does really is the day-to-day operations of the office. Assist with meetings, talk shows like this. This is very unique. I think there's probably two or three other counties in the state where a sheriff from one county has come back to be the chief deputy with the sheriff. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, well, you know, ASA does not work for me. We work together. And it's a team. It's a team effort. So just very fortunate and humbled to have him here. And it's already paying big dividends. You know, now you've got two sheriffs for the price of one. And I'm able to, you know, we're able to bounce. He's always been the voice of reason for me. And that's a huge win for Craven County. Folks, it really
sometimes Sheriff Hughes gives me too much credit. He's been a lot of voice for reason for me over the years. Like I said, you know, we've known each other for many years, and I've been 28 years in the Carter County Sheriff's Office. Sheriff Hughes got a a few years. You're just slightly older than me, but got in law enforcement a little bit before I did. But we worked together when I was a deputy on the road. He was in the patrol in Carteret County, and been friends over that time period. And then when he was elected sheriff a number of years ago, and we've worked closely together. You know, people always remark, you know, it's kind of neat to have you here working with our sheriff now, because you guys have worked so closely together from each of our offices, and also Sheriff Davis over in Pamlico, mm-hmm. you know, yes. in this district, and working with our DA's office. You know, we've been friends, we've been professional colleagues for many years. Our offices have worked together so well, and now we have a drug task force that's in operation with all three counties.
As well as the state.
And the mm-hmm. SBI. And so, you know, it's really an amazing thing when people aren't just professional colleagues, but they're friends as well. And we're all in the mix. We all see the big picture. And it's really good when you have that type of close working relationship, working for the people to get the job mm-hmm. done. And I'm honored to be part of it. You know, I retired full time a little over a month ago. And had to stay out for a certain period of time, about 30 days. And the sheriff asked me, he said, well, my chief deputy's retiring. Would you be interested in coming and helping me? I said, well, let me think about it for a little bit. I said, yes. Absolutely, because being retired and sitting home is not my cup of tea. And I'm just delighted to be able to be part of the good things that are going on here in Craven County.
By the way, it was a privilege that I think one of your last, quote, functions was the Back the Blue that we had back in May,
yes.
where we were honoring officers and deputies from various organizations. That was one of essentially the last functions that you were able to work within your
yes.
purview as the sheriff. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Appreciate all that you folks do on that.
Oh, that's a great event, too. What you got to yes. just to be able to recognize our deputies for the outstanding work. Because, you know, he and I are just blessed to be able to hold these positions to kind of steer the ship. But it's the men and women of the office that really make mm-hmm. this thing work day in and day out. And yep. they certainly don't get the credit they deserved a lot. They certainly don't get paid what they deserve, mm-hmm. Whereas we're getting there. But, you know, it's...
One of the things that happened within the organization a couple of years ago. Now, we used to have a fundraiser, like something over at Copper Ridge or something like that, a dinner at Copper Ridge and a guest speaker. I know, like, we've had Chief Justice Newby and a few other folks as our guest speakers. And we would give tickets to each of the organizations, a few tickets, so they could have the member and maybe the mom and dad or kids or something like that. But a few years ago, we changed 180 out and said, it's got to be a free event. Now, we don't have that as a source of income, but it's got to be a free event because the people that we need there, not only as us, but also the folks that work with the honorees, because the honorees are really honored by the folks that they also work with on a day-to-day basis. We could not afford tickets for all of them, but instead, it's really been fun to provide the at least the venue for them.
Oh, so yes. appreciate it.
Just
we see a lot more sheriffs and a lot more policemen when we made it a free event, and that was the idea.
Because they need that recognition. You know, sometimes you don't get it on the street.
I mean, you know, and look, the overwhelming majority of men and women that work for our offices are really passionate about what they do. They want to make a difference. They want to serve their community and make it a safer place for us all to, you know, live, work, and raise our families, our schools to be safe where our kids go or our grandchildren. It, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, they have families to raise. They've got bills to pay and stuff like that. And it's tough, you know.
Now, what are the changes? I mean, you've been in office for how many years?
I'm finishing up my second term.
So what would you say are the most important changes you've done during that time?
Continuously reducing the crime rate, continuously reducing the overdoses and overdose deaths we're having. Deputy and detention officer pay, you know, that has been an ongoing project. It is every year because I have to compete with the public sector. I have to compete with the federal government, with the state government, with the base. You know, when Asa and I first got in, it really, we probably had a few bills to pay, but it was, you know, it was really a calling, and I would have almost done it for free, you know.
If you look at what we got paid back in those days, we almost
we did. And even today, when I look and I try not to look at the hours I've worked versus what my salary is, because it's, I love it. I love what it is.
Who sets the salary of the sheriffs?
My salary is set by the county commissioners.
And the deputies?
It is. It's set
by the county.
Right. So anything that has to do with budget for my office is governed by the county. Mm-hmm. And that's good. I don't have a checkbook. My office doesn't. So I do like the checks and balances of things, the way, you know, procurement and salaries and all that. Now, I will tell you, and I tell every commissioner and the county manager, my deputies are not making enough. My detention officers are not making enough for putting their lives on the line every day and night. They don't make enough. And, you know, they have been good, but it's been a struggle to get there. And, you know, I remind them, one of the number one functions of government is to protect its people. Well, we are the front line.
Amen.
No mistake about it.
Amen.
So we've got to take care of our people. And there's still a lot of work to do. There is. And look, from the hard work of these men and women, that's why we are continuing to see the crime rates in this county go down. You know, when you see overdoses and overdose deaths over the past 3 to 4 years go down by 600%.
Wow.
Breaking and enterings of residents north of 300%. Breaking and enterings of businesses about the same number. Violent crimes.
Cars in Bryce's Creek recently.
That's it. And you know what? And just about all of them unlocked vehicles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they're going through the center console, you know, so keep your doors locked. Because, look, they're not spending a lot of time to get in a locked vehicle. Not unless there's something that really looks good sitting there.
Right.
So, you know, guns, jewelry, cash, computer, laptops, secure them, take them in, and lock your vehicle.
You know, I was a couple of years ago, I was going to go to, I like ice skating. There was going to be a big ice skating event up in Baltimore. And I was really reluctant to go. Driving a car with North Carolina plates because of the fear of crime.
In Baltimore. That's regardless of what kind of vehicle you drive.
Yeah. but I had read an article that said they particularly look for southern plates like North Carolina because there are likely to be guns in the car.
Oh, well, yeah, we love our guns.
So they break into the cars with North Carolina plates. That was a deal breaker for
probably
me.
Need to make sure one of us aren't sitting in the vehicle when you do it.
That's right. Try that in a small town.
That's right.
Way back when, up in the New York area, everybody had that sign on the dashboard, no radio.
That's right.
It was already stolen.
That was the New York City car sign.
Protected by Smith & Wesson.
Not in New York City, right. Unfortunately.
Folks, on that, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
Round here, folks like to talk to each other, get to know you, look you in the eye, and see that you care. We call it the human touch. Whether you were born here or moved here really doesn't matter as far as we're concerned. You're from round here, and since 1905, folks like you have been calling folks like us for their auto, home, life, and business insurance. So come see us, or just give us a call, and we'll get you the best insurance protection possible at a real affordable price. We're Robinson & Stith Insurance, because when you really need help, you'll want somebody from round here.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Thanks for listening. Welcome back. Again, thank you for listening to our show, and thank you for visiting our sponsors. Okay, we're coming back.
You know, we're kind of where we left off about, you know, we have seen a drastic reduction in overdoses and overdose deaths. A number of reasons. One, we have a rock star team of deputies that are out there taking dangerous drugs and dealers and traffickers off the street every day. Just phenomenal job. We have also put processes and programs in place in our detention facilities to help deal with addiction. That too has helped and saved millions of dollars in cost avoidance and just dollars in general, because these people are not coming back with an addiction. But let's back it up a little bit more and, you know, talk about the border being secure versus unsecure. Clearly, when it was unsecure during the previous administration was some of the times we both had the highest numbers of overdose deaths and overdoses in our counties, even though we have probably hands down the most proactive, aggressive drug enforcement programs in place. And we'll put our task force up against, I'd put them up against any task force in the nation of like size or even larger when, you know, when his county's leading the charges and convictions in death by distribution cases, and our county is leading the submissions of fentanyl to the state lab for criminal prosecution and analysis, I'd say we're doing something right. And it's not because our problem's bigger than anywhere else. It's because we've made it a priority to aggressively go after these places.
Proactively going after it and pushing it out of the counties. Now, we may not eliminate it.
And we can't.
Totally.
Yeah, we can't. And we both said, you know we can't enforce our way out of it. But by God, we can make it so damn difficult for them to operate here, they're going to move somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And I hate to move that problem somewhere else. When I move it, they're certainly not going to Carteret County. They're not going to Pamlico. Now they're not going to go to Lenoir County. You know, they're going to go to some of the other counties where it's the path of least resistance.
And I want to add how this it has a ripple effect, because when the cases that you get, when you send them to the DA's office, they have to make a decision whether or not which ones are going to go to trial, which is a huge investment in judicial resources and DA resources. But which ones are going to offer plea bargains to, and whether or not the defendants are likely to take them. Well, the more often you have jury trials on drug cases that end in a conviction, the more you are able to offer plea agreements that, you know, get rid of those drug cases like that. So the more you bring, the faster they can get them out the back door, the more money it saves in the judicial arena.
Yep.
And to do that, you have to have a populace that's willing to put these guys in prison. So the fact that our populace here in Craven County is so supportive of you, our sheriff, and your drug program, I think probably leads to more plea bargains. I know people hate plea bargains, but 97% of criminal cases in the United States are done by plea bargain because jury trials just take too long and they're too labor intensive. But the more we support you, the more likely the DA is to be able to hammer these guys quickly and efficiently. So there's a ripple effect, and you don't always see it in public, but it works. And so we thank you for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We thank the citizens.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Ultimately, it comes back to the citizens and what they're willing to tolerate and what they're willing to put up with.
That's right, because if the citizens are willing to bust these guys out of jail, refuse to convict them like mm-hmm. they do up in D.C., right, the less likely we are to be able to get a handle on the crime.
Exactly.
The citizens in our counties, Craven, Pamlico, and Carteret, this judicial district, prosecutorial district, are not sympathetic at all to a drug trafficker.
And I'm
drug
so
dealer.
Glad I ended up in one of those counties.
Yes, ma'am. They are not. So for us to put together these solid cases, he and I both have had really good district attorneys with Scott Thomas, who's not only a personal friend, but was lockstep with us on putting these folks away, knew the ones that needed help, but the ones that just chose to sell this poison, let's get them. So that was very important to us. And the citizens, like I said, when you have a jury trial, regardless of the makeup of the jury trial, they have no tolerance for that nonsense.
Law charging the distributor for the overdose, is that something new or has that been there a while?
I'm going to let Sheriff Buck speak to that because he pioneered that one.
The death by distribution statute, I want to say that was enacted in legislation around 2018, 2019. And when I say we, I don't mean like me and a small group of a lot of people in the state of North Carolina tried to get that pushed and enacted. And luckily we were successful.
What difference has that made?
I think it's made a tremendous difference. I'll give you an example. We had a case back in 2016, 2017, where we had death by distribution didn't exist back then. So we charged a drug dealer with second-degree murder. And we weren't able to get that person convicted of second-degree murder, even though we had a confession, even though we had the third party who transported the drugs to the person who died testify against the drug dealer. The jury would only come back and convict on involuntary manslaughter. Well, we had this. The federal government had that statute, but certain things had to be met in order to have a federal case, which was almost impossible for us to do on the local level. So we got that new law passed, death by distribution. And for some reason, it's just easier for jurors to convict someone for death by distribution, even though the penalties are the same. It's hard sometimes for people to wrap their mind around the term murder. They think about run over with a car, gunshot, bludgeoned, that type of thing. And they think, well, you gave the drugs to the person, they ingested the drugs themselves. But still, that dealer, that person who puts that drug in someone's hand should be held responsible. And it was hard to prosecute those cases years ago. So now you fast forward to a time where we have that statute and we aggressively work to charge people with those cases, and where you have a district attorney's office that will prosecute it. Every time you bring one of those folks into court and you get a 7-10 year conviction on them, boom, well, they're gone. They're in prison. And, the more drug dealers we lock up, whether it's through death by distribution, whether it's through the trafficking, where we get stiff penalties on them, repeat offenders where they get their probation revoked and then they go back to prison. Carteret County, Craven County, you go out and lock up a few hundred drug dealers every year and you put those people in jail and you send them to prison. Well, they're not back in the community selling drugs. That makes a big difference. And so all of these, thank God the legislature gave us that tool a number of years ago. And we needed it before, back when we were having overdose numbers and deaths, but not like when fentanyl came around. District Attorney Thomas and I, many years ago, we were going around talking about the prescription drug crisis and the people who were overdosing and dying on prescription drugs. I mean, that was a high number compared to what it used to be with other street drugs prior to that. But when fentanyl came along, heroin and fentanyl, it was just a game changer. And those overdoses and overdose deaths spiked precipitously. And so the legislature gave us that tool, and it's been a tremendous tool that's helped us in local law enforcement to hold those dealers accountable and make a difference. We're not seeing fentanyl like we were a few years ago. I think a lot of the dealers have kind of gotten smart and going back to dealing other drugs. because the legislature has enacted so many stiff penalties for possession of fentanyl, selling fentanyl. And then, of course, if we can establish a case to hold someone responsible for death by distribution, and then we hit them with that hammer, too. So it's been a major made a major impact in our communities.
Now, one of the things that has been added since you've become Sheriff Chip is the canine program.
Yes.
You want to talk a little bit about the impact of that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, very proud of that program. When we came into office in December of 18, we had no dogs. And I had a lot of veteran sheriffs told me, because they knew I kind of wanted to mirror what Sheriff Buck was doing in regards to going after the trafficker, the dealer. And, these narcotics are moved from point A to point B to point C, typically in a vehicle. And it's our job to interdict it. Well, these criminals are very crafty about how they hide things and package it so we don't smell it. But the dog, however, with their noses being 10,000 times more sensitive than ours, and, the equation I've made many times when I've talked to folks about a dog, if we walk into the room and, someone's cooking beef stew and we walk in and the dog goes, "Man, that smells great." I said, "Yeah, it sure does." And the dog's like, "Well, yeah, I smell everything but the carrots. There's no carrots in that beef stew." That's how, they know the 7 or 8 narcotics, that scent, and that's what they hone in on. Regardless of whether they got it sealed in a Ziploc baggie in the middle of a jar of peanut butter, they're that good, and that's what they do, and that's what they're driven on. They're work driven. So these, we have 7 of them. We have 8 positions for 8 of them. We've got 7. They're all narcotic and patrol dogs and tracking dogs, and they account for a large amount of narcotics that we pull off the streets and highways in this county. And they're used, we support other counties, we support the feds when they need them, we support state agencies, and all the municipalities in the county as well. We are called on many times to help provide.
Are the dogs narcotics specific? Like, is a certain dog trained for marijuana and a different dog for an opioid, or are they all?
A lot of them, now all of mine are not trained on marijuana. We do have 1 or 2 that are. All of them, though, even the ones that are trained, are not like just cocaine. They're certified on a number of different narcotics, meth, fentanyl, marijuana, cocaine.
Heroin.
Heroin. So there's a lot of them that they are, and also any derivative of any of those.
So if North Carolina would make marijuana legal, what would that do to the dogs that you have that are trained to sniff that?
To sniff the marijuana?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there would still be trafficking marijuana.
There would be. There'd still be trafficking. And, you could run into some of those same situations with some of the hemp products. That is marijuana. Let's face it, that's what it is. Some people call it flour, but plain and simple, it's marijuana. We would hit on some of the marijuana, but it doesn't mean that we would stop operations.
Okay. Wouldn't retire the dog.
9 times out of 10, there's something else besides marijuana in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the deal is that if marijuana became legal, it would be personal use amount. So the guys that are trafficking it in kilos, you would still need dogs that can smell marijuana to catch those guys.
Okay.
Folks, on that, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. And again, this is CCTA Wake Up Call. Thank you.
I thought.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Around here, folks like to talk to each other, get to know you, look you in the eye, and see that you care. We call it the human touch. Whether you were born here or moved here really doesn't matter as far as we're concerned. You're from around here, and since 1905, folks like you have been calling folks like us for their auto, home, life, and business insurance. So come see us, or just give us a call, and we'll get you the best insurance protection possible at a real affordable price. We're Robinson & Stith Insurance, because when you really need help, you'll want somebody from around here.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? People in the community that love this country to protect individual liberty and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Please join us at the CCTA Business and Social Meeting. We meet the fourth Thursday each month, Moore's Old Time Barbecue on Dr. MLK Boulevard in New Bern. Your presence and participation are greatly appreciated. Next meeting will be August 27th, 6:30 to 8 p.m. Welcome back again. Thank you for listening and staying with us. We're going to change hats, and I think we're going to go back a few years, and actually we're going to go to a testimony today. Dr. Fauci, he gave his Fifth Amendment plea 111 times, okay, and testifying before Congress. So we know nothing other than the fact that his diary tells it all.
Yeah, that's interesting. Why would he have a diary, and how did the powers that be get a hold of it?
It was on federal servers. It was saved on across 11 different federal servers.
Now, that was pretty stupid.
Why would you put your diary out on the internet?
Well,
I mean, I remember growing up, it was a locked little book that you hid somewhere.
Yeah, well, when you've been working for the federal government for 50 years, you don't really see a distinction between your personal stuff and your government stuff. I mean, how many people are sitting in their federal office doing day trading?
Okay, so since we have legal minds here, I'm going to pose the question. After all the testimony was done, after we got done listening 111 times to the Fifth Amendment, on the advice of my attorneys, I want to know the answer to whether what happened today is protected under the blanket immunity plea he received before, and try to understand that, because it seemed to me that Dr. Paul seems to think that they can get him on contempt of Congress. So I'd like the legal minds to explain to us. And
how
you're all
works.
Shaking your heads. I don't know what you're talking about. Okay, Pat.
I was listening to Claim Book on the way here, and they referenced a statute, a federal statute, that says you can be found in contempt of Congress if you refuse to answer questions before a subcommittee called on a particular issue. You can be found in contempt of Congress. So he refused to answer any questions like, what color is your tie? Is there a red binder on the table in front of you? What color is the carpet? He took the fifth for all of those. So he refused to answer. They asked him, what date is it today? He took the fifth. So
They were trying to link his testimony into Lois Lerner, where previously she had made a statement and then pleaded the fifth. Where does that tie in?
Lois Lerner, the IRS thing?
I guess.
Yeah, she was the IRS
during the Tea Party,
with the 501c3
during the Tea Party
things that she slow walked.
Yeah. I don't remember enough about that to draw a comparison between them, but I think the legal analysts that are commenting on whether or not Fauci is in legal jeopardy, possible legal jeopardy, if he had testified fully today, is that the so-called pardon was for a period of time. Any crimes committed between these years, well, see, now they have his diary. What he was saying about things then.
That may have preceded?
No, they have his diary, and that's usually what we're missing. We don't have his internal records.
Okay.
And we were going to ask him questions on what would you say about the fact that when you said X, in your diary you said Y. he would have to come up with an answer during this period of time. So he, are you lying now or were you lying then? So he's
so that's
risk.
Where he's vulnerable?
Yeah.
Okay.
According to what the legal analysts are saying. I mean, I don't think we've come up with, we've had blanket amnesty or pardons. So we've never had to really, you know, confront this issue before.
Well, we didn't use the auto pen quite as much.
Yeah, and that's
in
a
those
whole,
old days.
That's a whole separate issue. Yeah.
But I think the thing that is happening is the American public, those that are paying attention, is waking up to the pile of garbage we were fed during COVID about the things we were forced to do and required to do that had no basis in reality, and some of which were actually dangerous.
Well, I read an article today, and it was very interesting. It was saying how the COVID drama, Fauci's COVID drama, drove the J6 event.
Okay, how?
And the issue, they were talking about the women that were killed, Rosemary Boylan,
yes.
Ashley Babbitt, mm-hmm. And the other women that went to prison for various things, that they had all been radicalized by the COVID drama, by all mm-hmm. the lies that the government was pushing. Mm-hmm. And so they had this whole segment of the population that was furious, that was angry, mm-hmm. that was angry at the federal government for heavy-handedness. And that when we were lied to about the election being rigged and stolen, these people showed up in Washington.
Yes.
And so, you know, they kind of made a tie between the fact that these were, because Ashley Babbitt was a COVID denouncer, big time. And of course, she was killed.
The people who were not able to visit dying relatives in hospitals, that leaves a mark. And to find out that there was really no reason for that, that really leaves a mark. So I think that when all of this comes out, there are going to be some pretty angry people walking around.
One of the big parts of the testimony today that I was glad to hear was they were talking about natural immunity. And if you recall what we talked about, everybody was supposed to get vaccinated and you were never going to get it. And they never took into account the natural immunity that had always been a part of our, mm-hmm. Quote, science. So I thought that that was really telling that it was part of the testimony mm-hmm. on record today.
The real natural immunity is when we can drink from a garden hose and play in the dirt and whatever else. You know, the interesting thing that we were talking about earlier was that we were considered conspirators because we were deniers of the vaccine.
Yeah, vaccine deniers.
Vaccine deniers.
Terrorists.
So we were terrorists and we were the conspirators, when in fact the ones that were doing the accusation were the conspirators.
Well, the sad thing is, too, that, I mean, all of us that didn't get the shot, we were ostracized from
yes.
family members and businesses. Mm-hmm. And I would go to Food Line and I'd go down the aisle the wrong way just to piss somebody off.
Well, I can remember yep. we had COVID before they had the shot. And they told us not to get the shot for 6 weeks. Well, during that 6 weeks, we learned enough about the shot to know we didn't want it. And a year later, we had our antibodies tested. We still had them. 2 years later, we had our antibodies tested. We still had them. And that really made a difference to me. And that told me that we weren't being told the truth.
Now, one thing online I did see today after the testimony by a pretty prominent lawyer here in New Bern was going after people who were condemning Fauci and his actions, saying that you cannot hold Fauci responsible without holding President Trump responsible because he was the president at the time. He was behind the fast tracking of the vaccine, blah, 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 blah. So we still have a faction out there who is going to die on that hill mm-hmm. with protecting that what was done.
President Trump was listening to the best medical advice he had, and he had no way of knowing that they were not necessarily doing what was right. I mean, he trusted them.
And also we can see, and now again, I'm not sure what the credibility of, at least from putting it into the courts, it's of Fauci's diary, things that he wrote within his diary versus things that he proclaimed to the public were very, very different numbers.
Well, and the other thing, too, is you have to kind of look at things as they progressed. At the very beginning of the pandemic was very different than a year or two in. And I don't think anybody faulted the president for trying to find a solution. But then once you had a vaccination and the government said, you must take this or else.
That was Biden.
And then you mandated it, and you're going to fire people from our military if they didn't take a vaccine, and then all these other things. You know, it was just a bridge too far. I mean, who would have been against having a vaccine that you could take if it did help in some manner? But when you go and say you have to do this or else, and then you had to have a card and you didn't show that card, you couldn't go to certain places. I mean, it was like everything else with the federal government. It was overreach.
And I think as you were saying there, looking at the vaccine, when the vaccine was developed, there was no liability for the vaccine manufacturers. Mm-hmm. They were exempt from liability for what they were creating.
Yeah.
And that exemption was based on another lie the government told us, that ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine didn't work against COVID, when in fact they did. And so by demonizing that and putting it aside, it got around the exemption in the statute that said you could only do an emergency authorization for this shot if there were no other treatment methods. Right. Well, there were two other treatment methods, but you remember how much we heard about horse paste.
We took it.
I bought it. I had it sitting aside just in case. In fact, I just bought Bactrim from Wellness Company in case I get explosive diarrhea at the topic.
On that, I'm going to change the twist on this a little bit. I think this topic is germane to where we're at and where we're going to be going over the next several months, and that is the past Governor Cooper has been completely responsible for a lot of things that went wrong
in
North Carolina.
And Mandy
and
Cohn.
The sheriff was talking about some things that they got, well, didn't get directly involved with, but supported completely, you might share. But we have an election coming up, and
we need
past
to remember
Governor
the past.
Cooper is on the ballot, and people just need to remember. But could you share a little bit about some of the experiences, like around churches, things like that?
Yeah, I can remember where I was sitting when the executive order came out. The first call I got was from Sheriff Steve Bizzle in Johnston County. Said, did you see the executive order coming out about closing down the churches? I said, yes, sir, I'm reading it right now. He said, all right, let's draft up some releases about what we're going to say, put it together, fine-tune it, and we're both at the same time, we'll shoot out the release. Fine-tune it took us about an hour. While I was doing that, I got a call from Keith Kidwell, said, hey, did you see this colorful language? And I said, absolutely, I did. And some more colorful language and some more.
From
and
you or Keith?
He said, I know I don't need to ask this, but I'm going to ask it. What are you going to do? I said, well, under no certain terms whatsoever are we going to enforce this unconstitutional order. I said, in my opinion is the governor has no right to do this. No right whatsoever. This is a violation. You know, people can't assemble in their churches and worship. That's not going to work. My deputies are not going to stand in the way of anybody or any church closing. We will not enforce that. Got a call from the governor and his staff, and that did not go really well for them.
We heard about employees at the prison that had to get the COVID shot in order to keep their jobs.
That they did. And, you know, not at our jail, you did not. And that's the beauty of being the sheriff. You know, you can dictate the policies and procedures within your office, and I did not make it mandatory for my people.
So you controlled what you could control.
Correct. Nor did we keep people from coming into the office to get their carry concealed permits every day.
So
we never shut down.
So where did My Body, My Choice go during COVID?
That's a rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm. That is a rabbit hole.
I tell you, none of the sheriff's offices east of my office shut down.
24/7.
Yeah. We still did fingerprints. We did it all.
Very good. Folks, on that, we've got to end the show. And again, thank you for listening. Thank you for staying with us. And thank you, Sheriff Hughes and Asa Buck, retired and Chief Deputy. Okay. And thank you for being with us. This is CCTA Wake Up Call. Have a great week.
Please join us at the CCTA Business and Social Meeting. We meet the fourth Thursday each month, Moore's Old Time Barbecue on Dr. MLK Boulevard in New Bern. Your presence and participation are greatly appreciated. Next meeting will be August 27th, 6:30 to 8 p.m.